this very moment, large sections of Pakistan in Kashmir, in Indian Kashmir, and in Pakistan part of Kashmir, are huge floods. Over the last couple of years, 30% of Pakistan was underwater. We're seeing a huge increase in temperature. We're seeing threats in terms of agricultural output, and we're seeing the adverse weather impacts that are happening that are devastating people's lives and livelihoods. It is a very, very clear example that climate is happening, that we need the kind of action, and that there are real energy solutions are out there.
And Bianca Jagger, Nicaragua.
Well, Nicaragua, of course, is suffering as well from climate change. But if I may just mention, President Daniel Ortega has a plan to build a canal across Nicaragua, which will be an environmental crime, which will cause a terrible impact, an irreversible impact on the environment, and that will affect communities and indigenous peoples because they will try to confiscate or to pay for that land. And it's something that I am fighting against in Nicaragua.
We want to thank you for being with us. Of course, this conversation continues. Bianca Jagger, International Union for Conservation of Nature's ambassador for the Bond Challenge. Their goal to restore 150 million hectares of the world's degraded and deforested lands by 2020. Also, Asad Raymond, thanks so much for being with us, head of International Climate for Friends of the Earth. And if you want to see our three-hour exclusive live coverage from the People's Climate March Sunday, go to democracynow.org. Democracy Now! Produced by Mike Burke and Nick Bazar. I'm Martin Nirmin Sheikh. I'm Amy Goodman with Nirmin Sheikh. Thanks for joining us.
You are listening to KBOO Portland, where the time is now 8:01. Coming up next is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio with our host, Paul Rowland.
2 years ago, Portland lost a musical and cultural icon with the passing of Ghanaian master drummer, bandleader, and teacher Obo Adi. His contribution to the raising of local knowledge and appreciation of African music in general, and Ghanaian music in particular, and his tireless work with local youth cannot be overstated. As part of our fall membership drive, KBOO is proud to present a celebration and retrospective of Obo's work on Thursday, October 2nd, from 1 until 4 p.m. Musical offerings, remembrances, and interviews will be part of this important figure's legacy. Join Andy Hosh and DJ Charlie and others at 1 p.m. on Thursday, October 2nd. The preceding hour, from noon until 1 p.m., will be filled with Ghanaian music as part of DJ Charlie's regular World Beat Connection time slot. See you then.
I'm Monica Beamer.
And I'm Mike Crenshaw. We're KBOO's new co-station managers. We're excited to be a part of the KBOO community. We're starting a new weekly feature on Wednesdays at 5:45 p.m. News from the Boo will give you an inside look into what's happening at KBOO, including upcoming events, station news, special programming, and future goals and plans for the station.
Be sure to tune in this Wednesday and every Wednesday after the KBOO Evening News for News from the Boo, an insider look into your community radio station.
Tune in to KBOO on Wednesday, October 1st for Turning the Tide on Climate Change.
An all-day special about climate change and the actions we must take now.
And don't miss a special guest, Naomi Klein, talking about her new book, This Changes Everything, Capitalism versus the Climate at 1 p.m.
That's Turning the Tide on Climate Change on Wednesday, October 1st, 8 a.m., 4 p.m. on KBOO Portland.
This program is made possible in part by KBOO Foundation members and a grant from Gazelle Natural Fiber Clothing and Full Circle Resale, featuring women's clothing, jewelry, and accessories with a focus on natural fibers since 1984. Gazelle and Full Circle Resale are both located at the corner of Northeast 41st and Fremont and at GazelleNaturalFiberClothing.com.
Thank you. Yes. My name's Paul Rowland. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO Community Radio. For those of you who may have been listening about 20, 25 years ago, that was my theme song on Wednesday mornings from 9 to 10 or 11, shifted over the years. That was Don Paul with We Can Have Everything. Boy, I used to love hearing that when I was so much younger and more enthusiastic. But hey, I'm still here and I'm still enthusiastic. And I hope you are too this hour of the morning. Enough to call in and join the conversation anyway. Number is 503-231-8032. Just want to let you know that I've been substituting here on this time slot for most of the last 2 months or more, and now it is officially my time slot. But of course, I don't claim to control this slot of our bit of the frequencies, but I do like to include and encourage other people to join in a collective conversation to try to move towards some greater unity, collaboration, coordination, however you want to think of it. That's my goal. And to the extent that radio is able to do that, and I think it does have a lot of power, I think community radio is a really precious and valuable tool, medium to further conversation, action, and collaboration. And I'm trying to spread the word about that, and I hope you will too. I went to the Cascade Media Convergence this weekend, where a bunch of media activists got together and are strategizing ways to regionally coordinate and collaborate further, share stories, share resources, share knowledge, expertise. And so one of the things that came out of that was, again, an idea for a network. And we'll be talking about that some. And I don't have a guest this morning. Oh, I lost my train of thought there for momentarily. But what I wanted to say was that this idea for this time slot, as I formally proposed it, was actually to try to do more networking through our KBOO signal. And this is something that's going to require people's active participation. I know there's people listening to us from, you know, all around our listening area, which extends fairly widely. I'm not sure everybody who listens to this is fully aware of the reach of KBOO. We have a very strong signal that goes off the KGON tower up in the West Hills. It goes to a pretty wide area on either side of the Portland Hills, out towards the coast, up into southwest Washington, out towards the mountains, somewhat down the Willamette. We also have two translators down in Philomath, so it reaches the Philomath-Corvallis area, down almost to Eugene, and the Hood River out in the Columbia Gorge area. And we need to talk to each other in this small part of our bioregion, not so small part actually. And the idea of a greater network is to join forces throughout the bioregion. Now, this is a topic of some differences of opinion. The idea of Cascadia bioregionalism is a way to organize ourselves, something that I feel very strongly is, it's to me the only thing that really makes sense. I need something that's much more tangible, where I can really relate to the people that I'm trying to do things with. And I basically believe that if we're going to move towards a greater form of participatory democracy, it's going to have some sort of regional shape. One of my slogans is, neither the state nor the market will protect us. We see that, you know, with all these mounting catastrophes from climate disturbance, whether it's Katrina or Hurricane Sandy, or these massive super forest fires that are besetting us, super droughts. Not to be gloom and doom, but we do have to recognize what is happening to us in our biosphere. And the idea of sustainability is sort of bandied about greatly, but what sense does sustainability have if it doesn't delimit some sort of area within which we can be sustainable? The nature of expansive empire colonial cultures and capitalist economic processes is to continually expand and basically no physical limits, running up against the basic physical limits within which we live on planet Earth. So we need to get real and get connected and understand where we live and understand what the land on which we live can actually produce to sustain us without taking things from far-flung regions of the globe. I think the local food movement is a very important part of this. People are realizing that in order to know what is really in your food, you need to eat what is locally produced. And looks like I just got handed a note saying, talking about having a name for my show. Well, that was a subject that I did want to bring up. But for now, we've got Wednesday Talk Radio. If anybody's got any suggestions, you can call them up. But today, I really want to talk about these issues I've been talking about. We got the Northwest Social Forum coming up this weekend. We had the Climate March, marches all around the world. Had one in Portland. I was busy with something else. I didn't get to that. I heard there was quite a few people there. Heard there was 400,000 or so in New York, which is somewhat unprecedented. You know, I don't want to play the numbers game, but, you know, numbers do indicate a certain level of awareness, a certain level of people's willingness to engage with things. And so, you know, maybe things are shaking up. I know that here in Cascadia, in the Pacific Northwest, resistance to the fossil fuel economy, fossil fuel-based economy, has been heating up, so to speak, over the past few years. Increasing number of actions against oil trains, coal trains, against export facilities to draw off increasing amounts. You know, what export facilities do is they increase production because, again, you know, if we need to get real about being able to, you know, the idea of self-sufficiency in energy should be the watchword for everybody in the world. And of course, there are areas that, you know, in transitioning to a fossil fuel-free or a much less dependent economy and world, there are areas that will need some help. We'll need to continue using fossil fuels in a limited way. But we need to, and so people will need some help from other areas. But of course, the profit-driven fossil fuel economy is what's really got to go. System change, not climate change, is what we're talking about. And so how do we do that? How do we prioritize? How do we unite, collaborate, coordinate on a local, regional, and inter-regional basis to do this? That's the task we have in front of us. And so that's kind of what I want to talk about. I had talked about in a number of programs the issue of like the role of psychology, the psychology of the individual and how it interacts with these larger systems, larger realities, and how we are stymied in our efforts to engage, to even feel empowered, to even feel the energy, to have the time. We're all trapped in multiple commitments, difficulties, all sorts of things that make it difficult for us to get involved in larger struggles. So the task is to help people who are less able to do that, to find the time and energy to support each other, mutual aid. Those are all the things that I believe in strongly. As I say in my program proposal for this time slot, my political approach tends toward the anti-authoritarian, decentralist, decolonialist, and anti-capitalist. I think we need more open discussion of various political analyses, approaches, and tendencies, and I am planning to include that in my shows, amongst other things. And I'll be talking a little bit more about what I plan to do with the show. I'd like to hear some from you about some of the things I've talked about. Number is 503-231-8187. That's the number to call here at the studio. Our engineer Steve is ready to take your calls. And I also have been reading a book. You know, that's kind of the interesting thing about having this platform, having this microphone in order to be able to talk at you, hopefully talk with you, is that I can share thoughts, you know, things I've been reading, things I've been involved in. But, you know, I'm not so important. My idea is to have the role of a catalyst and facilitator. That's the role I prefer to have. And so that's what I do here on KBOO Talk Radio. I think that's what we try to do here on KBOO Community Radio, is to facilitate community discussion, to facilitate community engagement. And boy, do we need more of that. You know, it's just really overwhelming. I think everybody feels it, the way things are going, even just on the level of Portland, the influx of people to Portland, the vast change the city has undergone in the last 20, 30, 40 years, last 10 years. And it seems to be accelerating. There's big discussion about these big block housing units, tearing down old houses, building new houses. And things just, that's the nature of the capitalist expansionist system, is things happen so rapidly without the ability of people to participate in the decisions. And by the time these changes are made, it seems almost natural. Seems like, oh, that's just the way things go, and you just sort of accept it. But the time for that has long since passed. We need to get back the power to decide what happens in our physical environment, what happens in our social environment, what happens in our politics. And we need to do that more directly. I believe in self-organization. I think there is certainly a role for electoral politics that is the form of collective decision making that we got, I believe, saddled with by the U.S. Constitution. It's a very complex discussion. And I would like to, over the next few weeks, months, discuss all these things with you. So, 503-231-8187. If you want to pick up on any of the threads that I've put out there, the idea that I like to do is to have some continuity, thematic continuity, to really have an actual conversation. You know, when you have a conversation, it means that people are really listening to each other and really responding to what people say. I think we have a tendency, this culture, to sort of be very in our own heads and sort of refer everything to our own mental processes. And I'm not immune to that. But we really need to try to work towards some sort of collective conversation that's about what's going on in our world and not just with ourselves. And we have to be very attuned to what's going on within ourselves in order to be able to understand what's going on. Anyway, I'm just sort of starting to ramble here, so let's go to our first caller. Amy, you're on the air.
Hi there, Paul.
Hello.
You know, yesterday at 5:30, there was a meeting for public hearing for Portland Planning Commission for the housing question in Portland.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at work. I couldn't take off work to go to the meeting, the public hearing. I understand there's one public hearing. So I just want to put that out, like, okay, what do people think about these meetings and public hearings where the public is actually in a bind? Because people who work can't go. Why do they set those times like that? That's ridiculous. And then the other thing is, I listen to KABU while I'm at work. I work 10-hour shifts, 4 days a week. And I listen, and I hear people at KABU who can't even pronounce the people who have shows, like Chris Andre. Some people call her Chris Andrea. I don't even know why KABU doesn't listen to KABU. And then, other thing, here comes the media. You had the media conference. What is the upshot? What came out of that? And this weekend, there's the social forum. I'm going to go to that because I feel that we are having to take things into our own hands, because nothing, no government, no city, no organized group is looking after people. What happened to City Hall? Where are our candidates that are for the people? Do you want to
all good questions? Well, they're all.
We have to get organized.
I agree, and the task of organizing ourselves is always not easy, given the conditions we're in. I can give a. There's really not all that much to report back about the Cascade Media Convergence, other than, a lot of people got together and had a bunch of workshops regarding radio, video, and various other subjects, some theme, particular issues like housing justice. And basically the idea was to connect. So people connected, and what comes out of it, depends on the ability of people to carry those things through. The main thing that I was interested in was the idea of a regional media network. And I think the basis of that was established that we can, share information from around the region about the crucial issues that are going on, say, on any particular issue. And we can organize together through sharing our stories and understanding, okay. What other people...
I just want to interject one thing.
Mm-hmm.
Yesterday, the United States starts bombing Syria. At the same time, we're talking about climate collapse. And I don't think bombing is going to be good for the climate. And then I listen to Obama, and he's talking all these empty words. I've been down to Jeff Merkley's office, empty words, all empty. And I feel like our systems of governance are hollow. They're absurd. Whenever people from the government start talking, I know they're lying. And amongst ourselves, it's, I'm almost feeling like people that I know, I'm trying to talk to them about 9/11. I'm trying to talk to them about gravity and the temperature that steel melts, and people are just, I don't know. I heard a word about sleepwalking. People are sleepwalking. And even at KABU, I'm just thinking, why, for the evening news, does not make sense to me, because people that are reading the news don't even know what they're talking about. So,
well, I think you're making some sweeping generalizations. I think you're making some sweeping generalizations here, Amy.
Yes, I am.
And I
have a big duck pan.
I think there's some validity, but I don't think that the it's I don't agree in general with that characterization. I think the KABU Evening News is well regarded, and I enjoy listening to it. But anyway, I got another caller on the line.
Well, good. Okay, I hope people listen and want to address some things that I've picked up here, because I can't understand your evening news. Doesn't make sense to me.
Okay. Well.
Okay.
That's taken. And okay. Thank you for calling. So yes, there's a lot of thought that's brought up that we're. I share that feeling. I think a lot of us share that feeling that we are all generally sleepwalking in a sense relative to the urgency of the situation we're in. But again, that's we're conditioned by. We're basically all, I believe, in some form of shock I have this book called Present Shock by Douglas Rushkoff, which is kind of everything, very kind of interesting. How we're just, you know, bombarded. We know these things intellectually, and you know, part of my what I want to do is not so much put information out. You know, I think that is important to share information, but the key is to how we get to a place where we're able to assimilate that information in a coherent way, so that what is happening makes better sense to us, and we can have a common understanding of what's going on in the world, so we can move together. It's a very tall order, but I don't see any other way to proceed at this point. But we do have another caller on the line. Malia, you're on the air.
Hi, I just wanted to comment on a couple things that you brought up. And even though you say a lot of people are in shock, I think that a lot of people are just blatantly ignorant. And I think that one of the things that I've seen happen, I'm 62 years old, and one of the things I've seen happen in the last 50 years is just an increase in tolerance where, and it's difficult to articulate what I'm saying, but simultaneously people feel helpless. There's so many incidents that have happened that are just blatantly wrong. Everything from that young black man being shot, murdered, to here in Portland, to James Chase being killed, to all sorts of things, that we allow our tolerance level to increase on what we accept. Just because little by little, as things are not dealt with appropriately, legally, that that acceptability that this is the way it is and we feel so helpless really takes precedence in our mind. But it's only a thought. It's only a belief that can be turned around. And people really need to do a reality check on their own tolerance level. Like, what will you accept? What won't you accept? Where do you draw the line? Because we're far beyond you know, what would be appropriate in tolerance with corporations, with police forces, with the erosion of our environment, and things that actually sustain our own lives. We're killing ourselves.
But and just to push back,
we really need to think about, you know, the old line, power to the people, because in the end, the people do have the power. We are a mass amount of people, you know, with fighting a few corporations, some corporations that have a lot of power, and our government. And in the end, we do have the final word, but people don't realize it yet. And it has to be when they realize it and take action that things are going to change. That sense of helplessness needs to be addressed consciously.
Right, but the helplessness, I guess the point I was making is, as you say, we allow our tolerance level. I think this is a difficult and somewhat subtle point that, you know, to the, what extent do we really have actual agency, and to what extent is some form of psychological defense mechanism, you know, some form of, you know, learned conditioning, you know,
we learned helplessness.
Right. But that means that we aren't necessarily sort of the masters of our own fate, as we, you know, this is the kind of the sort of almost the underlying ideology of our culture says, you know, pull you up by your own bootstraps, you are, you know, you make your own life and all this stuff. And I think that's one thing that I've been trying to address on this show is that we need to get to these underlying psychological mechanisms and try to understand them better.
So you feel that it might not be possible for people to pull themselves up by their own bootstraps?
Well, I think or I was actually going to look that up before the show, but I think the origin of that phrase is that is actually the way it started was actually not the idea that you can, but actually that it is impossible to pull yourself. It's a physical impossibility to pull yourself.
I just saw this on the OPB show the other day where it had a reversal in meaning at some point in time, mm-hmm. and it had to do with corporations.
Right.
But, you know, getting back to that one thing, I'm always flexing back and forth about it because I truly believe that the basic needs of most people in this country are not getting met, whether it through their own efforts, you know, to sustain themselves. Literally, there's so many people that are suffering just because of basic needs not getting met that it's very hard to be involved in things outside of yourself when yourself is not taken care of, or your family or someone close to you. And I'm talking basic needs like food, housing, heat, clothing, you know, some of the basics. That's how bad off we are. And one last thing I'll say is that as of recent, I watched the Roosevelt Show, and it really reminded me of an era, you know, just after the time where I grew up, where we some of the politicians and the people that advocated for us truly cared about who we were as people and what constitutes us as people, and that our basic needs do get met. And there's such a profound feeling of unity as a nation that can be born out of this. Right now, part of our fragmentation as a united American group of people has to do with, you know, this very concept. We don't trust our government. We don't trust each other. And until we can, you know, get our ethics and our morality, you know, somewhat restored, it's very, very difficult to, you know, get anything done. And it's so interesting with all these problems and all these things. This is a whole different topic, but I always get back to something that someone said to me once, is that we need to really look at what it's going to take and line it up to put our planet back in some sort of restorative order. And population is one of the biggest factors that everyone's afraid to talk about yet.
Okay, well, we've got a couple other callers, and you've made a lot of points, and we've got a lot on the table, so thank you very much for calling.
Okay. Bye-bye.
And next we have Lee. You're on the air.
Hi, Paul. I really appreciate the conversations that you create. But the one thing that really bothers me in the entire rhetoric on this is no one seems to be addressing the issue of personal responsibility. We seem to say that, you know, it's our leaders that aren't doing things. And what I feel is that, you know, we need to take personal responsibility and say, okay, I need to cut my energy consumption by 25% or 40%, and that if I don't like the goings-on of particular corporations, well, then I'm going to refuse to buy their products. You know, it seems to me somewhat hypocritical to go to a demonstration in Washington, D.C., from Oregon, where you have to use fossil fuels to get there.
Yeah, well, you know, I mean, I hear that, and I personally, you know, I could speak for myself, I guess. I mean, I bicycle and take the Max. I buy most of my products, my food products, in bulk. I hardly buy anything new. I mean, I could go on, and I've done this for a long time. I don't actually see things getting much better as a result of my personal actions. So obviously, personal actions aren't enough. And right. And if other people aren't doing that, I mean, it's like just trying to convince other people. You know, that doesn't seem to be. You know, you get into the question: how do you convince them? Like, okay, KBOO, we try to do our best, but we're not getting out. I mean, yeah, I got all these internecine questions. So obviously, there's some mechanism missing in terms of a collective way of going about things that is not inculcating a sense of personal responsibility. So it's kind of a catch-22.
I understand that. And I guess what I would like to say is that maybe instead of programs dealing with policy issues, we need to articulate practices that can be beneficial and that become the standards by which we judge both ourselves and other people. I grow an incredible amount of my own food. I make a point of, you know, not driving as much as I possibly can, to the point where, you know, I don't go places that I would like to go to. And I think that individuals need to collectively articulate strategies that can be beneficial on a personal level.
But isn't it a systemic problem that we have a social system, political system, economic system, legal system that is organized in a certain way that actually inhibits people from organizing their lives by ourselves? Isn't that like a fundamental issue?
Yeah, how do we change our culture? We change it by doing things personally.
Right, and by doing things collectively.
Right. So, you know, in a sense, is it a chicken and egg problem? No, I think it's an issue of, to change the culture, we have to change.
I agree.
And you know, I'm not saying that we stop, you know, attempting to make policy changes, but I think that in a sense we need to start doing personal things.
Okay.
Thank you.
Well, thank you for calling. And again, you know, these are the kind of conversations that need to happen in small groups, affinity groups, where people actually get together. I know that that there's these resilience groups that have sprung up around the country where neighbors, and maybe not necessarily close neighbors, get together and have potlucks and actually sit down and talk about these things, where they can actually share, you know, share cars, share power tools. I know there's tool lending libraries in Portland. I went to the North Portland Tool Lending Library party up in North Portland on last Thursday, and I think that's a very good initiative. And similar things like that are really valuable. And so before we go to our next callers, I want to say that Portlanders, I got handed something about the Portland's 2035 Comprehensive Plan proposed draft, which is available for review and comment. Portlanders may submit feedback on the proposed 2035 plan online through the MAP app, APP, or in writing to the Portland Planning and Sustainability Commission. After considering testimony and revising the proposed plan, the commission will submit a recommended plan to City Council in spring of 2015. KBOO hopes to have some programs on this coming up. This is from the city's website. As a state-mandated plan, the proposed draft will be presented to the city's Planning and Sustainability Commission, a volunteer advisory group responsible for advising City Council on long-range planning decisions. The PSC will hold several public hearings where Portlanders can testify in person starting in late September. The meeting was yesterday, and meetings are still to happen. We'll get some announcements on about them October 14th. Community location to be announced October 28th, November 4th. And I'm sure you can find all about that online by going to proposed 2035 plan. Again, you know, that's at the level of bureaucratic decision making, which there's been some criticism of. I have great criticism of. I don't personally have much time to get involved in such things. Like a lot of people, you know, it tends to devolve on, you know, people who are citizen activists, neighborhood activists, to do such things. It's all very complicated. But people who want to directly get involved in that process, that is the way to go about it. And I think that's a valuable thing to do. I think it's valuable to get involved in City Council. But I do think we need to move away towards more direct citizen participatory decision making. And that's what things like the Social Forum, Northwest Social Forum, coming up this weekend is all about. That's what the Cascadian movement is about for me. And let's go to our next caller, Marianne. We have Marianne. Go ahead. You're on the air.
Yes. You know, I have been listening to you now for the last 3 or 4 weeks, and I have one question. What's your point? I mean, you're all over the map. Are you looking for us to make some kind of a psychological change so that we can do some of these things? Good God, man. We're at war. we're exploding in terms of our culture, and you're talking about exchange, a tool exchange. I mean, you don't seem to be able to concentrate on a subject. People call in with specific information and problems, and you don't answer. I mean, why are you doing this program? What is your goal?
Well, I'm sorry that you have difficulties with my approach, and that's I respect that. I'm not sure how to answer. You've just brought up a whole bunch of things yourself, which are difficult to take all at once. I think other people seem to engage with the program, and I mean, I don't know. Are we stopping the war right now? I mean, does it seem like we're moving in a direction of actually stopping the war?
Don't you think you'd be more valuable getting somebody on your program that's addressing the issues that's tearing this planet apart rather than this gobbledygook that you've been putting out?
Well, you know,
I'm a sustained member now.
Okay.
This time slot is very precious. And it's the only time I can listen. And so far, I haven't heard.
Well, so what are you doing? So what are you doing then? What are
I'm
you doing to respond?
I'm 85 years old. Would you like me to give you a rundown of what I've done?
Well, give me, I don't know, tell me
I
something.
I can go right back to protesting the Vietnam War. We're not talking about me. We're talking about you and this program. And if you can't come up with a focus, and if you can,
okay. Well, listen. This isn't.
Point,
this isn't going. Okay. Well. Okay. We got your point. I appreciate that. And we'll see if other people feel that way or not. You're one person, and we appreciate all our callers. We appreciate all our members, especially our sustaining members. And I'm sorry this isn't working out for you, but I hope you'll keep listening and see the points that we're trying to make here. The idea of psychological change, yeah, I mean, I feel very fundamentally that we are the problem. The part of the problem is actually that we do need to make deep psychological changes. And as part of our culture is that our culture has created certain dynamics with not just, you know, the idea of the reason why we're going to war is because we have an out of control economic, political, military complex. And the reason why we're unable to come to grips with us, I mean, it certainly hasn't gotten any better since Vietnam. And, you know, and it just seems to be getting worse. And so, you know, we're all struggling to come to terms with that reality. And I'm doing it in my way. And hopefully over the weeks and months, you'll keep listening. We have another caller on the air. Boris, go ahead.
Hello.
Hello.
Yeah, two things. I'm impressed with your callers this morning. Slight caveat, perhaps, with the last caller, but I really appreciate KBOO for this very reason, the callers that call in. And it's important to note, I think, especially to your last caller, that these callers wouldn't call if it wasn't for a facilitator like yourself who, you know, allows for the conversation to take place. And so, you know, I want to make that clear. But having said that, I also want to say that I would second just about everything that your first caller said about KBOO, in that I find very similar complaints about some of the KBOO personnel, and so I think it's worthwhile to bring those points up. The one thing in particular that I would recall is that her comment about the people that read the KBOO Evening News or KBOO News in general I would agree. They don't seem to be very well informed. It's more like they're reading a script, and they don't really understand what they're reading. They just read what's presented to them and like that. So that would be my comment. The other thing I want to bring up is a discussion about the word terrorism, and I want to present to you and to the listeners my feeling about it is that the word terrorism has become a tool of the power structure in ways that I don't think the average person even stops to think about, and I want to present it relative to this climate march that took place this past weekend. The climate march in New York, 400,000 people turned out in the street carrying signs and so on. And I want to make it clear that type of tactic has happened over and over again. And as you have already pointed out this morning, what has changed? Not really very much. What I want to point out is that if a small fraction of that 400,000 had actually participated on Monday in the streets of Wall Street and had actually shut down Wall Street, then you would see an effective use of numbers of people. But I want to also make clear that I guarantee you that if that had happened and if Wall Street had actually been shut down, that the major media would have portrayed those people sitting in the streets in a nonviolent way. They would have started to portray them as terrorists.
Well, I'm not so sure about that.
Let me finish my point, and then you can comment. Because what I think the word terrorism really means is anything that threatens the ability of wealthy people to move their money and to increase their wealth. That's really what the word terrorism means to the power structure. And they obviously don't care about the death of innocent people. That's not what terrorism is about. Terrorism is about anything that really affects the global movers and shakers to increase their wealth and to protect their wealth. And if the people in New York had shut down Wall Street, I guarantee you that effort would have started to be portrayed in the media as a terrorist act. Okay, I'm done.
Okay, well, thank you for that. I think those are very valid points. But how to shift the terrain on the characterization of terrorism is the big key. I'd like to really briefly share an experience that I haven't done yet. We only have about 8 minutes left, but I was involved in northwest Italy in a struggle against a high speed train. Which is a very complex discussion. A lot of people like the idea of high-speed trains. This particular high-speed train line made no sense at all. It was going to devastate an entire valley. And it was also tied into very corrupt mafia subcontracting and a whole political payback boondoggle anyway. And massive tunneling, very little actually increase in decreasing travel time relative to the massive infrastructure created. In any case, a whole valley rose up against that. And over the course of several years, you saw people going from, you know, a few dozen people to hundreds of people to a 60,000 person march, a general strike in the valley, to basically where the people were evicted from a protest camp and a crowd of 60 to 80,000 came back within 2 days from all over the region around Italy and evicted the police from the where they had been evicted, where they had put plastic mesh tape around and had a platoon of carabinieri police there and basically nonviolently evicted them just by force of numbers. And of course, that set off a whole debate within Italy. But amongst a lot of people, it was a very strong message. It really shook things up throughout Italy, and I think to some extent throughout Europe. It was really an epical moment. This was in 2005, and I've been arguing for some time that it masses numbers of people doing something. It shifts the terrain. where a few individual people create economic havoc, like in these laws against disparaging corporations who, raise animals for livestock and whatever, fur farms and stuff. And people try to just videotape to expose that. There's laws against people doing that. And people are labeled terrorism for exactly the reasons that you're talking about, Boris, that it impedes economic activity. And, you know, you can put that across the board. But if large numbers of people do that and shut down things, it might, that's the one thing that I see is potentially shifting the debate, the terminology and possibly, you know, change the dynamics. But we haven't gotten to that point. I'm not, you know, encouraging mass illegal activity. I can't do that on the air in any case. But I'm just saying, you know, in terms of looking at what might change things, you know, we have to expand our imaginations. But we are running out of time. I do need to say that coming up this morning, KBOO at 9, the guests are grassroots women activists from the U.S., Nigeria, and Tibet. They will talk about their vision for change and the work they do on the ground to dismantle oppression, empower women, and shift the paradigm. At 10, Air Cascadia. At 10:15, Flashpoints features peace activists David Swanson, Kathy Kelly, and Malachi Kilbride talking about Obama's bombing of Syria. 11 on the Recovery Zone, biologist David George Haskell discusses his book, The Forest Unseen, A Year's Watch in Nature. And at 11:30, we speak with Robert S. Hunt, Marilyn Keller, and Skeeter Green about My Walk Has Never Been Average, Stories of Black Tradeswomen, a multimedia presentation based on the lives of women whose stories are rarely told. Thanks, KBOO members, for your support. Not a current member, you can become one by going to kboo.fm and clicking on Donate Today. Let's go back to the callers. Leslie, you're on the air.
Hi, good morning. A few callers back, a gentleman was talking about personal responsibility, and I can respect a lot of the lifestyle things he said, and I try to practice them myself, but it needs to be remembered that Mobil Exxon gets billions of dollars in subsidies from the U.S. government, even though it's one of the most profitable companies on the planet. The way the banks were bailed out, but particularly oil companies, these are companies that get billions of dollars in subsidies despite being incredibly profitable. And the idea that by riding a bike, that's going to be enough to undercut that is, I don't know, a little bit naive. That's why systemic action has to occur. And also a lot of the foreign aid we give is really subsidies to companies. When Israel gets $3.1 billion in aid per year from the U.S. government, and a lot of that comes back to U.S. military contractors like Boeing. So in effect, that ends up being a subsidy for Boeing. So I think these things need to be thought about. And it's great to compost and garden and ride your bike, but that really isn't going to undercut the money that's flowing to Mobil.
I couldn't agree with you more. And obviously, no one's saying they're mutually exclusive. And I don't think that's what the caller was saying either. I mean, a lot of it's sort of relative emphasis, but we certainly need, we need cheaper public transportation in Portland, for example. I mean, $250 each way. That's a lot of money for folks. You know? That's a lot of money for me. It's a lot more money for other people who can less afford it. You know, I'm working right now, so I can afford it. Some people, yeah. I mean, it should be free if we had a society in which massive amounts of resources weren't going to things that our caller just now talked about, but. The way to get there is the only way is through collective collaboration, coordination, and conversation is how I'm putting it anyway. And I'm trying to do my part here on KBOO, and we're trying to do that. And I think we can do more. I do think some of the points about criticisms of KBOO itself, this is a participatory place also. And people may not have time to come down and get involved. I understand that. But putting out the criticisms needs to be done also in a form that can actually help create change. Just putting out there is a good step, you know, whether it's, you know, the specific validity of each point, you know, has to be judged. But I do think that we need to talk more as a station. We need to talk with our members and listeners more. We need to have more joint conversations. Sounds like we got something coming up on the air. That's my theme song by Don Paul. We can have everything. Thank you so much for listening. I will be back next week. My name's Paul. This is Wednesday Morning Talk Radio here on KBOO Portland.
Community Radio is a proud co-sponsor of Oktoberfest 2014, held at the Breakside Brewery on October 4th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. Oktoberfest will be celebrated with limited-release Firkin-conditioned beers, live music, and family-friendly games, and a human foosball tournament. Join the Breakside Brewery and other Inner Southeast Portland businesses and community members to celebrate this year's harvest season and Portland-made craft beer. That's Oktoberfest, Saturday, October 4th from 3:30 to 6:30 p.m. at the Breakside Brewery, 930 Southeast Oak Street in Portland. More information can be found at kboo.fm on the right side of the homepage under Community Events.
Wednesdays for an afternoon of jazz. Hosts of Jazz Lives, A Jazz World, and Jazz in the Afternoon play the very best in jazz music. From the historical to the present, and jazz of all stripes. Swinging, smoking, bluesy, funky, new and old, but all good. That's Wednesday afternoons from noon to 4 p.m. here on your community radio station, KBOO Portland.
And this is KBOO Portland. Good morning. It's time now.